Highline.
Podcast?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the questions were, do I know about this? Do I listen to it? Of course I do.
Okay.
We got a Mark Goodman?
Yeah?
Yes, of course. Tell him. Mark. Chris listens to it.
All right, you're on the record, Chris.
You know, because I like listening to it because it's people who know what they're talking about, and I enjoy that. That's the truth.
Compliment received, sir.
I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Boarding the Highline with Rabbi and Red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the Highline.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. And officially, Chris Armas. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Happy spring sports equinox, Nuggets, Avs, fans, all the other sports that are going on. The Rapids got another win against a struggling MLS team. Anthony Hudson is out at Al Markyasha. SC as a technical advisor. Adam Beaudry might be on a flight to London, and Everton won a Merseyside Derby, which is the Premier League equivalent of Rabbi Mark Goodman seeing the Rapids win the Rocky Mountain Cup. Joining me now, a man whose family just got a dog, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
I'm more excited about that than I am about Columbus beating Monterrey in the CONCACAF Champions Cup semifinal first leg. Of course, that's the home leg, and the Monterey return will be pretty tough. Yeah, we got a dog. We got a 55-pound pit bull named Zuby.
Oh, it's a pit bull.
Yeah, my wife likes pits. So, he's 3 years old, so he's kind of like semi-trained, but he's been adjusting to the house. So it's been an experience. It's very tiring. We got a dog the day before Passover. And we've been in Passover for the last 2 days. And so I've been working and feeding the kids because they're on break. So I'm really tired. So if nothing that comes out of, and I've been doing a lot of rabbiing the last 2 days. So if nothing that comes out of my mouth for the next 45 minutes makes any sense, you'll all forgive me. And you'll lean on Matt's erudition and brilliance to carry us through this show once again, like normal.
Mark, do we have a dog name?
Zuby, I said that.
Zuby, okay.
It's all good.
Okay, we didn't...
It came with the name, and changing the name is like a big problem. So it just gets a lot of nicknames. Like, so my wife calls him Zuzu, and I call him Zusha, because it's a very Jewy name. And I'm trying to think.
You got a dog during Passover, Mark. You could have named the dog Matzah. I feel like that'd be a fun dog name.
We thought about it. Matzah was a possibility. I like Yontif. For a name, Yontif is the Yiddish word for a holiday in general, but we just wanted to keep it simple and keep it with what the dog was already doing. So
okay, very well then. Are dogs allowed to have I assume they can eat non-leavened bread? Yeah, can they have matzah? Are they allowed to have that, or are you not giving the doggo people food?
I don't know if you know this much about matzah, but matzah is basically something that gums up the internal workings of the human bowel system. And so if it does so for humans, I would assume all the more so for dogs. So we're trying to keep the dog on mostly. I mean, the dog is eating. The thing that I'm mostly worried about, Matt, is that the dog is eating so well right now. And we'll never live up to this again. So like, you know, the first night Seder, I made brisket. And the second night Seder, I made chicken. And the dog got all the extras and the table scraps. Like, this dog is living it up rich. I mean, like, this dog had gravy for, like, homemade, you know, brisket gravy for dinner. Like, this dog will never have it as good again, at least until next Passover.
Okay, very well. Mark, let's get to some actual soccering news. First of all...
That's your favorite transition, by the way. That's always let's get to some actual soccer instead of brisket. Yeah.
Okay. You did tell me before not to turn this into like our relationship, like married couple podcasting fight or anything, Mark.
Let's.
You did, you did say before the pod, it's later. We had to record later. Both of us are accountable in this, to be clear, listeners like this. Yeah.
No,
attention, Rapids fans. Rabbi and Red are breaking up and we're divorcing and you're going to have to listen to two podcasts now. No, just kidding. But so in any case, Mark was commenting that he's tired because we're recording later and he had the dog and everything.
It's all my fault. I had to work. I had the dog. It's all my fault.
Okay.
Onward.
Once you are settled with the dog and everything, we're going to do a whole banter topic on what's going on with the dog, because this is a Colorado podcast and we need to hear
more about the dog.
Yes.
We'll start a separate podcast, dogs with rabbis, and soccer fans.
Absolutely. So listeners, earlier this week, Nosso Palestra, NOSSOPALESTRA. Is an outlet in Brazil that covers Palmeiras, the parent club to Rafael Navajo, and they were reporting, if I'm understanding, Mark, the Google translation from Portuguese into English, is that Colorado Rapids are currently negotiating to make the acquisition of DP striker Rafael Navajo permanent, but they're trying to do so by negotiating down the transfer fee and potentially doing this prior to the expiration of Navajo's loan and then thus the expiration of the widely reported $4.5 million transfer fee. There was the $5 million number that was floating out there, folks, that myself, Tom Bogert, Brendan Plone, others had reported was a $500,000 USD loan fee, and then the actual purchase option was $4.5 million. And so I posted this on Burgundy Wave, Mark, and this got a mostly nice discussion amongst the Rapids community about Navajo's value and what he's bringing, what we think that he's capable of achieving now that he's scored a goal from the run of play, all the other non-goal scory stuff that Navajo does that are valued by the Rapids and everything, and what does this mean for his price valuation. So Rabbi, at the risk of us turning into the algorithm that Transfer Market uses to assign player valuations and everything, your thought on all of this going on, and right now, what do we think Navajo is worth? What is his transfer fee right now if he was on the open market?
Personally, my number is $1.5 million. I mean, I posted it as a question to our my loyal ex followers. God bless them all. And the high end was $2.5 million. That was Scott Hammond, who's a loyal HTHL listener. Hi, Scott. But the rest of folks were really kind of snarky and basically throwing out, like, you know, kind of a plug nickel type jokes. So I think a lot of people either don't really want to spend the money on a transfer fee because they've become accustomed to the Porik Smith way of managing things, where there's no, you know, like we can get it for nothing. Why spend anything? But I think also the possibility is that, like, people don't really love him, and Hoffa hasn't scored a lot of goals from the run of play, and his finishing has been questionable. He's not quite, we haven't quite figured out what he is. He's not a kind of pounded home with his head, Alan Gordon, Dombaji type. He's not like a swift, dribbly kind of attacking forward like Thierry Henry. He's not a fox in the box like Muller or like Chris Wondolowski. He's mostly kind of fox in the box-ish without the finishing. You know what I mean? Like, that's, if you're a fox in the box, you've got to finish. And so I think that is leading a lot of people to say, you know, he's done some good hold up play. He's big and physical, but he doesn't really tick the boxes. So 1.5 is my number, but even that, I mean, I could see spending 1.5 and then ultimately getting a guy who winds up scoring like four goals from the run of play a year and regretting the spend. So I'm not sure. I'm not really sure. Matt, where are you at?
I don't see how Palmeiras accepts that price valuation, unless there's an option, unless there's a sell on clause or something in case Navajo does super well. And then one of these, I feel like, is it Portugal, Spain, I feel like, are the typical places that Brazilians land as well, Mark. You know, Navajo's old enough and doesn't have enough upside enough to where he's going to Real Madrid, like how Madrid spends, you know, 30 to 50 million euros every couple of years on whichever big Brazilian superstars coming out of the out of their Serie A. So I could personally live with 3 million. I don't think he's worth 4.5. I think you'd be hard pressed to find a Rapids fan willing to spend that money right now. I don't think you can warrant the big thing for me, Mark, is I don't think the end transfer fee should be where he breaks the record that Georgie set in December, January. For me, I think is the big one. I think the big question that I have is, you know, because we've got what I think it was. There's 19 games before the loan option expires. This Saturday will be game number 10. So they've got what 10 games left, Mark, and he's got 3 goals on the season. If we go back, you know, he's played what 1600 minutes now, roughly, and maybe 1700, and he's got 4 goals. There's the 2 penalties. There's the garbage goal box in the box against Dallas last year. And then there was the similar poacher's goal that he scored against San Jose. You know, the numbers still really don't like him, Mark. I know that's something that Wanners and you and American Soccer Analysis have been drumming up the last couple weeks. And so, you know, he presses well, obviously. He's well-liked by the team. He clearly wants to be here. Mark, we could point out DPs who didn't previously want to be here, or we could go down the rabbit hole of Skel Shingashi faking that his hamstring was bummed because he didn't want to train on a random Tuesday with Anthony Hudson. There's plenty of other DPs who have not had the same mentality or tenacity or togetherness with the lineup. And this, Mark, despite Navajo, I think he speaks about as much English as Max Alves did. And Jack Price literally never spoke English to Max Alves in the 2 years that Max was with the Rapids. So, you know, the question I have, Mark, is the recent trend that we've seen of the 2 goals getting more big chances. You know, he had 2 really good looks on goal for me against Dallas on Saturday. Is this a blip or is this a trend? Is this an indication of him being more comfortable in the league, more comfortable with the team, and the team being built to be more successful around him? You can't spend, for me, Rabbi, $3 million on a player and then on a striker and not have him be exactly what you want for the team and exactly what the team wants from him, and someone who clearly is going to be your main best goal scorer on the team. So if you're asking me to assign a value, what is he worth to the Rapids based on what the output probably is going to be, Mark? I'm closer to $2-2.5 million, which isn't that far off from the 1.5 that you spent. And you know, color me shocked that the Colorado Rapids had an option to buy on a player and they're trying to make it permanent because he's been mostly okay and hopefully he's going to get better with time. But hey, we want him, just not for the price that we originally negotiated and everything. That's not something that, you know, Warwick Smith has done this on literally every single loan with an option to buy in Rapids external history. I think they've executed options to buy, Mark, on internal transfers. That might be what happened with Lalas Abubakar. I'd have to go back and check my notes on that and the article I wrote on that. But Rabbi, any other thoughts on Navajo?
Just a real simple thought, which is the for me, less so than the money like coming out of KSC's pockets, because it doesn't really matter that much, because what we care about is money that gets under the cap. I think the biggest challenge with a larger salary amount, a larger transfer fee amount, is that it generally has to hit the cap. It affects how much money overall you spend, but you can amortize that amount over the length of the contract. And so that means that the larger the transfer fee is, the longer you want to keep the player, because you can allocate parts of the transfer fee over those years. So if it's 1.5, then they could probably afford to give him a 2-year contract. But if it's more than that, then they probably need to give him a 3 or 4 year contract, because you can't take a $2 million cap hit, you know, over a year or 2 years.
That would be such a poor Rapids math thing to do, Mark. That would make so much sense. Let me just check. I can't remember Navajo's age off the top of my head. I think he's like 25.
28?
He's 24, actually.
24.
So a 3-year, or I guess if you're talking about making it permanent, Mark, in terms of the, you know, I do like a 3.5 year contract then. So the rest of this year and then 4 years more, or maybe you do 3.5 and then plus 1 or something like that. There's a few other things that you could have. And I would almost, I don't know that he's done enough, Mark, to warrant being the highest paid player on the team right now. I think Cole Bassett should be the highest paid player on the team right now, given what Georgie hasn't done so far this year. But, you know, I think maybe Zach Steffen, now that I think about that. But so, you know, I think, Mark, if he was also, if you could couple that with a contract where maybe he takes a slight pay cut, but then you build in performance incentives. So, you know, say like a 5-goal, a 10-goal trigger, stuff like that, team makes the playoffs, those kinds of things, then I think you could get towards that number. You know, if the Rapids end up getting him for $2.5 million and he's making $1 million, 1.1 mark, then I think that decreases the pressure and the expectation on him, and then also the financial burden of him, especially if you combine that with spreading out, you know, that $2 to $3 million transfer fee over the course of a 3-year period, which then gives the club a little bit more flexibility. They'll have spent the money right now. Kroenke's writing the check right now, but then that's spread out so that that doesn't limit them in other ways financially. And who knows what happens with the cap, Mark, with, you know, how MLS has, you know, been changing the rules just in the recent last couple of months as well. Listeners, let us know. We want to hear from you. These are two of us who have thoughts on this, but, you know, what do you think is an appropriate valuation? What's a price that is too much? What's a price that is reasonable? How many goals do you think Navajo would have to score in order to be worth various prices? Mark and I both said, you know, right around 10, 12 goals in the 19 games before the option to buy expired at the end of June, and Navajo is not on track to reach that as well. How many goals would you have to see for him to be worth $4.5 million, etc.? Anything else on Navajo, Mark, or shall we get to the Rapids on Saturday night on a frigid, snow-encrusted in the end corners, Dick's Sporting Goods Park? The Colorado Rapids got a 2-1 victory over FC Dallas. Mark, absolutely fantastic result. Obviously, some things in the performance that we'll get into. But, Mark, the Rapids come out, and for me, were clearly the better team in the first half on another night in which a player other than Kevin Cabral is getting those chances. The Rapids are probably up 2-3, possibly even 4-0 at halftime. If we had a remotely competent finisher at that left wing position, Mark, that player, instead of Kevin Cabral, could be getting a hat trick. But in any case, the one chance that you had maybe for Dallas in the first half, Mark, that was a concern was on their first corner 10 minutes in which old man Omar Gonzalez got an open header on the center backs in the middle of the box, but he puts that right at Zach Steffen. Steffen had a very nice game other than the one shot that he didn't stop, Mark. But then you just had a series of very, very good chances, both in transition and in possession, in which the Rapids got the ball forward kind of meanderingly. But then you saw Keegan Rosenberry overlap and put the ball into the mixer. So 26th minute, for example, Rosenberry crosses into the middle to Navajo, who isn't able to control and get off a good shooting opportunity. The ball falls to Kevin Cabral, and his shot is blocked with him, you know, right in a really good position, high XG opportunity. 2 minutes later in the 28th minute, you had Kevin Cabral overlapping with Sam Vines on a really, really good run where he almost skinned Ibiaga. Ibiaga commits the foul, gets called for a yellow card. It's the second worst thing that happened to Ibiaga that night. In any case, in the 28th minute, Sam Vines with a fake dummy, Mark, and then Georgi Mihailovic putting the ball into a very good spot and Kevin Cabral heading it just over the bar. I should point out, listeners, for those of you who didn't see my post before the game, I was volunteering for sustainability night, and I was out sharing some pamphlets and information on sustainability and what people could do to be more environmentally conscious. And I was at a booth at the top of section 105, which was like the perfect, as I was looking, I could have drawn a straight line, Mark, between where I was sitting, where Georgie and the ball were before the set piece, and then where Kevin Cabral ultimately headed it. And I think, Mark, from the angle that I saw in real time, I think that ball is going in without Kevin Cabral getting to it. And there is nobody else at the back post for Dallas or Colorado who's getting to it first. I think if Kevin Cabral misses on that header, that ball goes off the inside of the right post and then in to the back of the net. Just my thoughts. 45th minute, Mark, after another sequence in which the Rapids are doing really, really good things, you had Rafael Navajo who got in behind. He had a shooting opportunity that ended up getting blocked. Cole Bassett following up on the play, runs the ball down to the end line, stays in bounds as far as we know, and he crosses into the mixer. And Mark, Sebastian Ibiaga doing his best imitation of George John in extra time of MLS Cup 2010. Chef's kiss own goal, as far as I'm concerned, unlike the Shaq Moore one, gets the 1-0 lead for the Rapids. It's at halftime. 46th minute, Mark, you had come in Calvin Harris with a really good opportunity in transition that he puts just wide, and 3 minutes later he goes in and scores off of a nice sequence in which Cabral did a good 1-2 with Cole Bassett, and then Cabral crossing into Harris, who was able to score. Let me check, Mark. I believe there's been some discrepancy between various sources, Rabbi, on which goals they're counting as an own goal and which they are calling as a goal for the striker. Because in stadium on Saturday, the PA announcer called it a goal for Cole Bassett, even though I've seen it ruled as an own goal. And then the goal that Calvin Harris contributed to, they had listed as a goal created by Calvin Harris. So effectively alluding to the PA announcer made it seem that Bassett was credited with the first goal and Harris, it was technically an own goal. MLSsoccer.com right now has it as Ibiaga an own goal in the 45th and Harris scoring in the 49th. But I've seen ESPN call things differently. I'm not sure what Opta is doing there. In any case, listeners, Rapids are up 2-0 in the 49th minute. Dallas kind of gets back into the game after the 60th for me, Mark, but the only real big opportunity that they had was the goal that they scored in the 87th minute. Bit of a mix-up at the back between Keegan Rosenberry and Moise Bombito. Not the first time we've said that so far this season. And Musa ends up finishing on a sharp angle shot that for me, Mark, Zach Steffen should have done a little bit more with. But ultimately, after 8 minutes of stoppage time, the Rapids see the game out. It was cold. It wasn't necessarily pretty. A 2-1 scoreline flattered FC Dallas, but the Rapids get out of Dodge with another win, Mark. 1 point off the top spot in the Western Conference. 5 games unbeaten. Second win at home. Rabbi Mark Goodman, things are vibing in Rapid Land.
They are. This is a team that produces a lot of opportunities and converts them. Dallas didn't look real great on the night. I think there were long stretches where their possession wasn't very good, and the Rapids were just doing a great job getting to balls faster than them. And I think the thing that I noticed most about the game was the amount of hustle, that the Rapids were just doing a fantastic job of winning balls and playing really well, and that was, you know, really impressive and really notable. But additionally, like, the Rapids create chances, and they probably need to convert more. I don't think this game should have been as close as it was, specifically because of Kevin Cabral, but I'll save that for bad thing. But this is a very this is a team that you know, twice in a row has gone into a game against a team that is one of the weaker teams in the Western Conference that they're supposed to beat, and they beat them. So it's like the advertisement that was in front of my kids, not my kids, but the public elementary in our neighborhood in West Wash Park when we lived in Denver, which was, I thought, was a really bad slogan for an elementary school. They put on their banner outside, "Meets expectations." And so this game met expectations in that the Rapids were supposed to win, and they won. What do you think, Matt? What are your good things?
I want to highlight the goal scorers or the players who contributed to the goals and everything, Mark. I thought Calvin Harris had his most solid three phases game, in that we have seen him work really, really hard off the ball to press. We have seen him work really, really hard in transition to try and create. I think, Mark, this might be his best performance as a member of the Colorado Rapids in terms of what he did in attacking transition, what he did in possession, and then what he did defensively to track down and really make life easy for Keegan Rosenberry. That's something that Keegan said post-game as well, Mark. I mentioned, you know, what do you make of, you know, what Calvin's done so far this season, how that's a continuation of how he finished last year and everything. And he said, it's a really easy guy to play with. I don't get forward as often as I do, but it makes my life easier defensively as a fullback. And so I can't think of a better compliment for a player than the head coach being like, you're doing a good job attacking wise, you're scoring goals. You know, Chris Armas said that. So, you know, if the head coach is saying you're doing a good job offensively, and your fullback is saying you're doing a good job so that I am not on an island defensively, you are doing a good job in this system as a winger. And Kevin Cabral, to an extent, is doing that. Calvin Harris is absolutely doing that. And for Mark, I know I've said this a few times as well. For me, you know, he is, I think he's clearly above Omir Fernandez on this one. I think, just like how Ollie LaRoz and Cole Bassett have proven that they are the option right now in center midfield, I think Calvin Harris deserves the right to play his way out of form at the right winger, right midfield position for the Colorado Rapids. Cole Bassett, Mark, continues to be the engine in the midfield for this team, and I don't fully understand, Mark, how he and Ollie LaRoz have made it look so easy in terms of what they do in possession, how easily they're able to freely move through opposing midfields. And maybe just Dallas's midfield was a mess because Pomico was out and Velasco was out and Sebastian Legette didn't have a great game, Mark, and even then he was played out of position. But so I am waiting for a game in which an opposing coaching staff and number 10 central midfielder really goes after Bassett and Larraz to make their lives difficult. And nobody's done that yet. And maybe that's because other teams have tried to do it and it just simply hasn't worked and I haven't been seeing it. But Bassett's making it work. He and Ollie Larraz are showing that when you've got two academy kids who played together as teenagers and you give them an opportunity in the first team and you put them in a position to succeed, that they can do amazing things, and that's fantastic. Loved the first 60 minutes, Mark. If I had to say what's the best opening 60 minutes, 0-60, that the Rapids have had, I think unquestionably this was it. I'll say it right now, even though it's my big thing. The big difference for me in terms of this game compared to the San Jose game, while the score was closer, the underlying metrics and the narrative of the game was heavily in Colorado's favor in this one. The Rapids controlled this game. They did what they wanted to, and the game plan went according to plan against the Dallas team. Whereas even though it was a 3-0 win against San Jose, there were points where they were not in control. The only time in which the Rapids were not in control for me was maybe the final 30 minutes and really just the final 15, especially after Dallas got that goal. And even then, in stoppage time, Colorado was, you know, they didn't give up huge opportunities. It never looked like Dallas was going to get their second goal. I thought the left flank was really good, Mark. Sam Vines and Kevin Cabral, I think you're having a nice release sequence together. And Kevin Cabral has become a weapon in terms of when the Rapids really want to attack the opposing right center back or right back, that Cabral can go at that player. That player is uncomfortable, has to foul him, has to give up a yellow card, and they get open looks. Now, Cabral's not doing anything with those open looks in transition, but, you know, baby steps here. So, and last thing I'll say, good thing I'll say, Rabbi, is that Lamine Diak, I thought, had another really solid game defensively coming on. I still have some qualms about what's going on in that situation, given supposedly the price tag that may be associated with him, how highly the front office was in on him, and then maybe just the situation, the financial implications of what the Rapids could be doing with this. If none of that ends up mattering, Mark, because Ollie Larraz becomes the god ginger midfielder that I've always wanted him to be, and he dominates the Rapids midfield for the next couple of years and then gets sold for millions of dollars after Bombito and after Bassett and Vines make their moves to Europe, second move to Europe in the case of Vines and Bassett, and Larraz gets called up to the national team. Do I care that it's Lamine Diak as opposed to a homegrown player? Absolutely not. Rabbi, you alluded to it. I'll defer to you on bad thing.
Yeah. It'd be great if Kevin Cabral could hit the broadside of a boat. He just missed a bunch of really, you know, obvious opportunities. I think that the highest percentage chance that he had in the 33rd minute, he had a 0.25 expected goals opportunity. Shortly after that, he had in the 26th minute, a 0.20 opportunity that was blocked. But yeah, you've got to be a little bit better on the finishing, man. I mean, that's where it's at. For the day, he had a 0.94 expected goals, which is basically another way of saying you should score a goal, and you didn't. Overall, Kevin Cabral is actually having a decent season for the Rapids. He's had an assist. He's got one goal, so his numbers are, like, not completely useless. Last year he was a lot more disappointing, but last year was a much more disappointing game all around. I think conceding in the 87th minute wasn't a great look for the team, although it was really an absolute banger by Peter Musa. Not sure really how to pronounce it, but whatever. Anyhow, this is a good, you know, like, we got out of there, you know, doing okay, and I really enjoyed this game. And I think your points are really well said, that how they kind of approach this one, and that the first 60 minutes were really overall good. You know, we're on to the next one, and the challenges, we start to ramp back up with some more challenges going forward from this one. So I am worried a little bit, though, that this game is a trap game, in that they you know, played a little bit to the level of their opponent. You know, maybe this one should have been more of an open and shut match. The game I watched yesterday, you know, Arsenal had is in a position where they need to win all their games for the rest of the season in order to potentially win the English Premier League. And I think they went into this that game yesterday. Mikel Arteta told them probably like, hey, we really need to perform from here on out. And what did they deliver? 5-0 over Chelsea. I think the Rapids are starting to get to that point. I'm not saying that they're a very good team and they need to be considering competing for the top of the league. DNVR posted today their podcast, and they one of their questions, their banter topic was, are the Rapids contenders? And my response was, no, they're not contenders. I'm not saying the Rapids are contenders. I'm not saying they're Arsenal. But this was a game where the only other downside I say is this is the game where the Rapids were expected to take care of business. This probably shouldn't have been close. And it wound up being a little closer than they wanted it to be. And so that's not necessarily a great thing.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that, Rabbi. Definitely retweet on that. You know, not to sound like a broken record, listeners, but still there are Navajo needs to score goals, and he had opportunities in this game. He didn't, not as, you know, he wasn't as blunderous with his chances as certainly Kevin Cabral was, but that's still an underlying concern that I have, that he's not being put in position to score high quality opportunities. And that's something that they definitely need to improve upon, as there is something going on outside of my, can you hear that, Rabbi? All the sirens and everything?
Mm-mm.
Okay, it just started.
Noise canceling is great on Zoom.
Okay. In any case, I apologize if the audio quality just got really terrible there for like 20 seconds, listeners. But so I didn't see a whole lot of Georgie in this game, to be honest, Burke. You know, it was a cold game. It was mostly around the edges and everything in terms of Bassett and Larraz building out of the midfield, and then certainly what the wingers were doing and the fullbacks who got forward at times. So maybe it was a game that wasn't necessarily for it, but it's another game where on the whole of the 90 minutes, I wasn't super impressed with Georgi Mihailovic. And I am increasingly not convinced that if Ronan comes back and Ronan goes into the midfield with Ollie Larraz, and that's as solid defensively as Bassett and Larraz have been. And if we were to take Georgi out and put Bassett in the number 10 position, I'm not convinced that Bassett would be as invisible or get as few touches or have as few big chance creating opportunities for himself or for others as Georgi has so far. So to your point, Mark, where, you know, our rebuttal response to the DNVR question of, you know, are the Rapids contenders? I would say right now, if I have to say, if it's a binary question, I say no. If it's a question where I can provide some context, I would say I need a larger sample size because we still only played 9 games this season, and I need to see more progress in terms of what they're doing against good teams, what their key players, Mihailovic and Navajo, are doing, particularly in the attack, and I need to see them put teams away. The scoreline against San Jose was acceptable. There were still aspects of the game in which it was too wide open. The overall performance against Dallas outside of the final 20 minutes, and I think there's a few things that maybe the coaching staff could have anticipated and made some preemptive changes in order to deal with a little bit better. Bassett kind of alluded to that they kind of let off in their intensity after 2-0, and so maybe this is a team that is learning that they, in order for them to, the difference between them being average and them being great is that they can't let up. Intensity, hashtag keep fighting, is their superpower in lieu of having a goal scoring DP. And that's something they're working through tactically, fitness wise, and from a coaching staff, you know, minutes management wise. That's something that I can accept, certainly. But, you know, there's still, you know, this is the type of game, Mark, that an FC Cincinnati, an Inter Miami with Messi only playing 65 minutes, it's 3-0 after 60 minutes and they put it away and there's no point where you feel like it's close. And, you know, San Jose hit a couple of posts last game, and there's another scenario where Navajo doesn't jump on that loose ball. You know, Yarbrough falls on it, and maybe we're talking, and maybe San Jose finds a way to get back into this game. So for as good as much as Colorado dominated those opening 60 minutes, the 30 minutes could have been better. And as much as they dominated those opening 60 minutes, it did not reflect itself on the scoreline. And the difference between good teams and great teams is that great teams absolutely put those games away, just like the 2021 Colorado Rapids did again in their home games against bad teams. I think about that Houston game. I think about that Dallas game that they played. I think they had another 3-0 or a 4-1 in there as well in 2021 as well. Last thing I'll say that it's a bad thing, Mark. Rabbi, I don't know how good of a wide shot you got on what the stadium looked like as well, but a member of the club who usually comes through and reports attendance came to us in the second half and gave us the attendance. And I had to double take in question of almost like the say that number to me again, because I'm not sure it's true. And that's because, Mark, the announced attendance on Saturday was 7,492. Now, you know, kickoff, it was in the 40s and everything. I was bundled up. There were a few inches of snow before the game. The field was a little heavy, Mark. There wasn't any snow on the field. Obviously, it had been cleared, but, you know, bad weather still kind of early on in the season. There's some things that we've seen the club put out in terms of marketing around some of their tickets for their more, for their big games in the summer, particularly 4th of July, that suggests that maybe their ticket sales so far this year aren't necessarily where they have been. Obviously, the big asterisk here, Rabbi, is that, you know, that that game was the same night as game one of Lakers versus Nuggets, which was at Ball Arena. And so I have to wonder, a lot of the I could totally see a Rapids fan who has Rapids season tickets punting on that and willing to shell out in order to see Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, you know, absolutely spank LeBron and company in the first game. So that's kind of a context there, Mark. But we've yet to see. We saw last year, Rabbi, where even when the team was doing poorly, the attendance was still relatively good and at times was impressive in the summer. And for as much change as there was in the offseason and all the players they brought in and how much recent success the team has had as well, we haven't necessarily seen that reflect in the numbers. Now, is that because the weather's been crap? Is that because they haven't played one of their big marquee home games yet? Is that because everybody's focused on the Avs and the Nuggets, who are in the first round of the playoffs? Or is that still a reflection of the how underwhelmed the fan base is on the club in the macro going back to last year, that is reflected in fewer people buying ticket packages or going through 338 or just season ticket holders who did not renew? Our questions that I have. Last thing I'll say, Mark, and it's my big thing. I said it earlier, but just another win and a game in which they control, and one that continues to have me optimistic that this team continues to make incremental improvement and that they are clearly going somewhere. The culture has clearly changed. Can they fix and improve on a few things individually and tactically as Chris Armas continues to iterate with this roster and everything? And if they do that, Mark, I continue to feel optimistic that this is a team that can and will make the playoffs. Anything else you want to say about this match, Rabbi, or shall we move on?
No, this I don't think this match will be memorable. I think the goal chances, the way the Rapids created goals, was really good. I mean, it was put it in the mixer and something good will happen. But like, neither of the goals the Rapids scored, I mean, one was an own goal, obviously, and the other one was kind of funky in the way that it came down. That is a slight concern. We don't really have a whole lot of highlight reel goals this year. So that's just like a thing to start thinking about, which is like the Colorado Rapids need to score goals that are definitive and impressive, as opposed to Cole Bassett had a good one at the end of last game. And he had another one, you know, against Miami. But other than that, we don't have a lot of distinctive or like firm, convincing goals this season. So that's a thing that I would like to see moving forward.
The Rapids, we get the ball into really good areas, and then our best finisher is a defender on the other team.
Yeah, thank God for other people's butts.
I'm not sure what body was it, like the inside of his leg? I don't think it was his. I don't think either own goal was a butt in this case, Mark.
No, but you know what I mean. Like, you know, I love the British comment that sometimes happens in a soccer game. He didn't know much about it, you know, like he wasn't aware of it, you know. So I was like that. I would like to score goals where we're very aware of it.
I'm sure that Cole Bassett struck that ball with every intent that I'm intentionally playing it off of Sebastian Ibiaga to go in,
right?
Just as much as that is exactly what Matt Congee was planning when he cut inside and shot the ball towards George Sean. Before what's his name slid into him and he tore his ACL. In any case, Rabbi, tell our listeners how they can best support Holding the High Line. What is our update on the more appropriately sized stickers?
All right, so we have some more stickers coming, and I will send those out to people by mail if they would like to spend a couple bucks, since Matt mentioned it. I'll probably put that onto the form for t-shirts. We are still selling t-shirts, with $3 of every t-shirt sale going to Azira Michael Foundation from the t-shirt, $3 from Rabbi and $3 from Red. So your purchase of a $22 t-shirt plus shipping ultimately results in $9 going to the Azira Michael Foundation, which supports all sorts of good stuff, including education and soccer fields, and community support for Michael Azira's home community in Uganda. We just wanted to add that we are the voice of the fans with a nerdy bent on stats and tactics who also need therapy for the psychic trauma of being a Colorado Rapids fan. So giving us financial support by becoming a paid, that's an old read, baby. By becoming a paid Highliner is greatly appreciated. Our paid Highliners at the $48 and $96 level get a t-shirt this year. We really appreciate you supporting citizen soccer journalism, aka supporter reporter journalism. It helped for me to go to San Jose a couple weeks ago. It helped for Matt to go to Miami. It'll help for all the gas that Matt pays to get out to training. Matt, who is Chris Armas's favorite reporter, or at least Chris Armas's most familiar reporter, for getting out to training more than anything else. We really appreciate any support you could give us. But even if you can't support financially, you can give us all the moral support by listening to the podcast, by liking and hitting the 5 stars on there and leaving us a review. Also, please go to our Facebook. It needs to pick up steam. You know, the algorithm nerfs it a little bit, but we need your love. Matt and I can also be found on Twitter, on which used to be called X. Wait, no. X, which used to be called Twitter. You can find us lurking in the Rapid Substack also on occasion. The Reddit. It's late. I'm tired. But if you'd like, also get a free subscription to our Substack. You can get all of my written content. I write something about once every 2 weeks. Matt writes something a little bit less for the Substack because he's spending all of his time and effort over as the managing editor of Burgundy Wave, where he is providing some amazing stuff. But by supporting Holding the High Line, you're also supporting Matt over at the BW. So however you want to support, we really appreciate it. Put a little nickel in the kitty for him, either at BW or at HDHL. And we appreciate you. Back to you, Matt.
Rabbi, before we recorded this, I recorded with Cincinnati Soccer Talk for their jersey swap session. I'll post that on our socials and I'll include the links in the show notes to our podcast once their podcast is up. But they did ask Mark whether or not I got asked, do you say you type BW as an abbreviation, but nobody says BW, right? And you're the first person I've heard say that. And then also there was a question of, are we calling it the Burgundy Wave? So I'm going to have to reach out to Abby Mood, Rosh, maybe even Chris White and ask, like, canonically, have we ever been at the Burgundy Wave? But I hesitate.
I'll just add one other thing, which is that there's a form going out about the t-shirts that will go to all the people who subscribe on the free level to the Substack, and we'll also put it on Twitter. I just actually have to have the time in my life to sit down and look at what sizes of t-shirts I have left. So in general, we pretty much have a robust number of the gray camo. I exclusively wear the gray camo. I love the gray camo. But if you're a small or a large or extra large, sorry, if you're a small or an extra large, we certainly have some in the black of the Holding the Highline t-shirt. So if you want a Holding the Highline t-shirt and you are of a specific size, we probably got it for you. Otherwise, gray camo for you, which it's a great shirt. I love it. You should rock it. But I'll get that form out as soon as I possibly can. For those of you who are listening to the podcast and have already put in some money and have asked or wondering, where's my t-shirt? It's been nonstop work for me between holidays and traveling. So I should have some time next week around this time to mail out any t-shirts. The shipping department at HTHL is just me. It's only me. So, you know, Rachmanis, have some mercy on me.
And Mark, I have to officially say I haven't asked Chris, nor would I ever ask if I was his favorite reporter, and I haven't been out to training as often the last couple weeks, so I might be losing in that power rankings compared to Braden Norris of the Denver Post or Mitchell Carroll from DNVR as well. But it was
shout
nice,
out to
Mark,
those guys.
It was nice, Rabbi, for Chris to confirm unprompted that he has listened to us, and it's because he thinks that
hi,
we know
Chris.
What we're thinking about. So the fact that he did that and didn't have to like awkward, he chose that direct route as opposed to distinctly looking at me and blinking three times. I haven't looked back at the film to see whether or not he was doing that, folks. The verbal confirmation was all I needed, and the affirmation. And it's nice to know, Mark, that we're appreciated in that regard. I don't know that the aforementioned Anthony Hudson, he probably would have hated listening to the podcast because we just criticized him all the times and everything. And I think Robin was healthy, but also introverted enough to where he didn't pay attention to any of that noise, and we certainly were noise about him in his final weeks at the Rapids. Mark, Tom Bogert of The Athletic is reporting from sources that Adam Beaudry could be on his way to have a training stint. That is the word that he is using at Arsenal. Beaudry has just turned 18 years old, and he's a goalkeeper who's had some opportunities with the U.S. men's national team, Mark. And reportedly, he's on the radar for some clubs abroad as well. I've had Chris Sharpie, who told me, Mark, that if they had gotten Beaudry 2 years earlier, potentially they would have already sold him for multiple millions of dollars. And this is not the first time, listeners, that the Arsenal Colorado Rapids connection has led to this opportunity. It was in one of the off seasons, Mark, I can't remember which. I know Cole Bassett went over for a training stint during the MLS offseason, but I think he was with the Rapids U21s. Don't quote me on this, Mark, but that might have been with Jack Wilshire on that coaching staff. Don't quote me on there. I think Sebastian Anderson had gone over there. I imagine maybe Sam Vines as well. So this is a little bit of a trend, Mark, and maybe it's a good opportunity for Beaudry, who is obviously not getting as many reps with the Rapids first team in games, obviously, because Zach Steffen is there and is healthy and is fantastic. He's maybe not getting as many reps in training because Steffen is getting those reps with the first team defense as well. And while he's had some worrying moments, Mark, for Rapids 2 in the start of this year and then even going back a few games last year, I think we can agree going into a higher level of competition where he's competing. Bogert did not say, Mark, whether or not he's going to train with one of the academy teams or the Arsenal first team. We both like Adam Beaudry, Mark, but I think even with all of your trepidation about how Mikel Arteta has handled the goalkeeper position, I do not think this is a training stint with an option to buy because of what David Rea or Ramsdale are not doing for Arsenal. But so in any case, Mark, what do we make for this opportunity for Adam Beaudry? What could this say about his greater potential, obviously? And I should point out, listeners, that Rapids 2 do not play another game until May 3rd. So Rapids 2 could have Ethan Bandry, their other goalkeeper, their signed Rapids 2 goalkeeper, come up on a short-term loan, short-term agreement, just like how Marlon Vargas, the captain for Rapids 2, made the bench against San Jose. Ethan Bandry could be the backup goalkeeper on the bench for the next two games for the first team. What happens after that, I think, is a really good question. How long is this short-term training stint for Adam Beaudry, given that Marko Ilić, Mark, is still on loan in Norway and the Rapids have no other first-team goalkeepers? And I'm not sure, Mark, legally, based on the MLS roster rules, that the Rapids can sign somebody else at this point. I don't think a training stint constitutes like you being removed from the roster and that goalkeeper roster spot moved up. But in any case, Rabbi, what thoughts on this opportunity for Adam Beaudry, and how excited are you for Arsenal to buy him for super cheap in 3 years and the Rapids get none of that money?
Yeah, I love it. I think you laid out all the specifics, and I immediately went to see, like, all right, well, who does Rapids 2 have who we could call up to be our goalkeeper? Matt, who started the Colorado Rapids 2 match against North Texas in goalkeeper?
Was it Adam Beaudry?
It was Adam Beaudry. So the depth of goalkeeper is, we're already using our backup goalkeeper to be the starting goalkeeper for Rapids 2. So that's kind of like, I wouldn't say concerning, but it just kind of deals with a little bit of depth there. But you're right, you nailed it. Ethan Bandry, who is 25 years old, will probably, I guess, is the logical candidate. But you know, we have turned over goalkeeper a ton. You know, William Yarborough for Zach Steffen, and then, of course, Marko Ilić for Adam Beaudry, and then also Abraham Rodriguez being kind of let go. So this would be a time when I wish we had A-Rod, because, you know, if you need a guy who can back up, that's kind of useful. The other thing is, you know, I've always been a big fan of kind of going to the USL for goalkeepers. And, you know, I don't know that, I think the interesting question that you're asking is, you made a very intelligent assumption, which makes the most sense, which is a training stint would imply that he's going to go to England and be there for four games, because that's the maximum amount of time that we can do a short-term loan with Rapids 2 for Ethan Bandry. The question then becomes, do you really want to stunt a guy's development with Arsenal because you have to deal with some sort of MLS Next Pro roster rules, when you could just buy someone at USL, you know, League One, or even in USL Championship for a pittance? You know, you could probably get a goalkeeper out of USL for 50,000 or 100,000 in a transfer fee. And, you know, it would suck because you'd probably have to send them right to MLS Next Pro. You could also make a loan agreement, I suppose, with the USL team. It's not usually done to loan a player who's really good for a short-term loan, but you've got to figure out a way to solve this problem. Maybe you buy a player who's young and has some upside, knowing that Beaudry, if he trains with Arsenal and then he eventually supplants Zach Steffen at the goalkeeper, will eventually be sold on anyways. So I don't know. I mean, I actually think this is a really interesting problem, because it basically says that MLS's roster rules, including MLS Next Pro, are kind of restrictive, and they ultimately, at most positions, they're not a problem, but because you can only play one goalkeeper at a time and your backup is going to play in MLS Next Pro, that means that both of your teams are going to wind up with one or two guys who just aren't going to see the field a lot. They're not going to get the development they need. So how do you solve that problem? You know, other teams like Arsenal have like a U23 and a U17 that they can use. You know, the MLS Next Pro doesn't quite have that level of development. We have our academy teams, but we don't have anybody at the academy level who's not ready to step up. So it's a little bit sticky, and I'm sure Horik and Brian Kirkham are going to solve it. And they probably will come up with a fairly clever plan, because they're smart guys. By the way, shout out to Brian Crookham. I ran into him in the coming into the locker room at the Rapids match in San Jose. I hadn't seen him in a while. I was like, "What are you doing here?" He was like, "What are you doing here?" Because Crookham doesn't usually go on the road. Crookham was doing radio that night, so it's fun to see him. Although it's another example of the Rapids like using people in multiple jobs. When all of them should probably be able to, you know, just do one job, just do the one thing. But I'm sure Brian loves calling the radio, and he does a great job at it. So anyhow.
If only there was another media person who used to work with the Rapids, Mark, who still lived in Denver, who didn't get a job with Apple TV, who totally could have pivoted from you know, dual video TV broadcast in order to actually do radio, and would have been happy to do that rather than just being a Rapids curmudgeon at times on Twitter. If only one of those people existed, and the Rapids could have had that person with them.
A lovable curmudgeon.
So last thing that I'll say on this, Mark, to your point as well, like, I agree there's some restrictions and limitations on the roster as well, but at the same time, like, to a certain extent, like, the Rapids did this to themselves. You know, like, A-Rod had an option. They could have brought him back and then had Adam Beaudry signed exclusively a Rapids 2 contract. They didn't have to loan out Marko Ilić, but, you know, this speaks to a roster issue that they've had at that position, Mark, which goes back to last year, which was the nature of the acquisition of Marko Ilić, and then just kind of the writing on the wall being that they were moving on from William Yarbrough, even just when they brought Marco in initially on the loan, and then how that handled in the summer in terms of the option to buy and ultimately finally agreeing to bringing him back and everything. So to your point, there's some restrictions on the MLS Next Pro roster, which I don't particularly care for, that I don't think is good for the individual player development, and I don't think it's good for the individual team. And one of the compromises, Mark, or one of the alternatives that we could have seen to MLS bowing out mostly from the Open Cup would be just to expand the number of short-term call-up games that you had as well. I think it's set to 4 right now. So you said, you know, we get a 4 games of Bandy on the bench and Adam Beaudry over at Arsenal across the pond, or you could have expanded that to 6 games. You could have put it at 10, Mark, and I don't know that I personally would have complained. I don't think there's enough examples of next pro players that are so much better than the MLS team to where like a team could be like subverting the cap or like intentionally underpaying a player and then making him available in a backdoor kind of way that is going to give you a serious competitive advantage if they're only going to allow to be available for 10 games across the whole season, all comps. But just my thoughts. Mark, let's get into it. So this coming Saturday, April 27th, the Colorado Rapids will be playing at FC Cincinnati. Currently looking at the MLS standings, Mark, the Colorado Rapids find themselves in 4th in the Western Conference, 15 points off of 9 games played. When I said they were 1 point off first place, I was wrong, listeners. They're 3 points off first place. They're 1 point off second place. In any case, PIDS 15 points off of 9 games played, a record of 4-2-3, a goal difference of +2, and away from Dick's Sporting Goods Park this year, they are 2-1-2. FC Cincinnati, listeners, currently with the same points in games played, 15 points from 9 games played, 4-2-3, and a goal difference of +2 as well. And at home this season, they are 1-1-2. Kind of a mixed bag, Mark, with some of the turnover that we've seen from FC Cincinnati. Alvaro Barriel, their big fullback, got sold to Argentina or Brazil. I can't remember which. Obviously, they had Brandon Vasquez go for, I think it was $7 million USD to Monterrey, and he then proceeded to score against Inter Miami in Champions League. They were playing tonight, Mark. Did Columbus end up winning that game? I saw they were up 2-1.
They were up 2-1 last I looked.
Let me check. Yes, Columbus ended up winning that 1-2-1. So in any case, Mark, they've had some turnover from the team that won the Supporter Shield last year, but they did get a very positive result on the weekend. They got a 2-1 win at Atlanta, defending MLS MVP Lucho Acosta scoring in that one, and then also their new outside back, Luca Orellana. I think that's how they're pronouncing it. But Mark, there's been some humdrum going on with what's going on with Bupenzo, their big DP striker, who kind of overlapped and maybe stepped on Vasquez's toes a little bit too much. And there's been some rumblings that coaching staff hasn't been happy with him, that he hasn't necessarily been not a malcontent in the locker room, but just that there's some discontinuity going on there. So they actually, Mark, started Corey Baird up top and then alongside Yuya Kubo, who I know is normally a midfielder for them. But in any case, Mark, looking at the defense, Alec Khan and Celentano have been the goalkeepers for them, and both of them been pretty decent. I remember when Khan was the backup before Brad Guzan got to Atlanta, and I always really rated him with what he did there. Mark, Matt Miazga and Miles Robinson, the big free agent acquisition they had last year, are backing up the back line, which has mostly been in a back three to allow them to play with wingbacks. Orellana is playing on the left. Former Inter Miami and USMNT right back DeAndre Yedlin came over a couple weeks ago, and he had an absolutely fantastic game against Atlanta. I don't know if you saw that game, Matt, Mark. And then in the holding midfield position, they still have Nuoboto. I'm still not sure how to pronounce that game, and I thought he played really, really well, Rabbi, in the reverse fixture of this game, the 1-0 Dombaji win. June of last year against Colorado Rapids. And then obviously Lucho Acosta, one of the best number 10s, not named Lionel Messi, in MLS, defending MLS MVP, and a player who's absolutely a force to be reckoned with. And Rabbi, we'll see what's going on in terms of the striker position, given that they ended up winning, albeit without Baird or Yuya Kubo scoring. And then maybe Bupenza getting dropped for a big game against Atlanta was the kick up the backside that Pat Noonan needs to give him, to where then he does some good stuff in training this week, which could then see Bupenza move up back to the starting 11. But Mark, what do we see in FC Cincinnati in the team, given the turnover that they've had, and given that the only thing harder than winning Supporter Shield in the MLS regular season is defending it?
I think this might be one of the few teams in the league that I haven't watched play at all this season. I mean, I've watched a little bit of the Western Conference because I watch, you know, a game either before or after the Rapids play. And I usually catch one of the 7:30s in the Eastern Conference on Saturday. I don't think I've seen Cincinnati yet, but I went to Cincinnati 2 years ago. It's a lot of turnover since then. Luciano Costa is the cream of this team. He's the class that kind of makes this whole system hum, and how they do is going to be determined a little bit by him. There have been some problems with Corey Baird. He doesn't have any goals. He has one goal this year, right? One goal? No, one assist. My bad. And in 9 matches, and in terms of his kind of overall stats, like his statistical kind of ranking compared to other forwards, he's near the bottom in shot attempts, and he's at 42% of the 42 percentile for chances created, and maybe most worrisome, he's in the 11th percentile for aerial duels won. So Barrett's not getting it done up top, so they had to bring Yuya Kubo in to kind of, like, you know, help out there. So the question is starting to become something that the Rapids dealt with last year, which is, where are the goals going to come from for Cincinnati? That's a great thing for the Rapids. They already have a strong defense. I do think that the biggest challenge is TQL is a really formidable place to play. It's very loud. The fans are there in big numbers. The rake behind the supporter section is really, really high. They call it the Bailey still, even though it's not actually the Bailey. I think they call it the Bailey still, even though it's not the Bailey. The Bailey was the name for the section in the stadium that they used to play at, but they don't play there anymore. So anyhow, I think that these all go in Cincinnati's favor. It's a tough place to play. Cincinnati is generally good at home. And so these are some things to kind of note and be concerned with. Interesting side stat that's thrown out there by Foot Mob. Matt pronounces it Foot Mob. FC Cincinnati and Colorado Rapids have not drawn any of their last 3 matches against each other. So somehow these two coaches are in it to win it. They're out for blood. They don't want to kind of, you know, get a quote unquote, get a result. By the way, another Englishism I very much like, because if you weren't a soccer fan and you just went to a soccer game for the first time and you heard an announcer say the team is hoping to get a result, your brain would immediately go, well, the game is going to have a result. After 90 minutes, it'll either be a win or a loss or a draw. Those are all called results. The result of the game is what happens in the end. But when the Brits say it, they mean they're trying to get, quote unquote, all 3 points. Yeah, I think
it's trying to get a positive result, Mark. It's like how when
they don't say
says,
a positive result, they just say a result.
Yeah, but when an American says what's up, they mean hello. When someone says how are you, they say hello. When they say get a result, you're talking about getting a
winner. I'm familiar with how English works, Matt. I'm just saying. here in Pittsburgh, by the way, I don't know if you know this, here in Pittsburgh, in Pittsburgh, you don't say it needs to be fixed. The to be gets dropped in a lot of sentence constructions in Pittsburgh. So they say needs fixed, just needs fixed, needs washed. We're actually technically out here, people say needs washed. Anyhow, it's very funny. So I think the Rapids do not want a result, meaning they want a result, but they want a draw. This is a game that you go in and you try and get a result, try and get a draw. I'd call this one as a 1-1. And again, I'll try again, even though it didn't happen last time. This is the game where Omer Fernandez gets his goal. Matt, what do you think?
I think 0-0 on this one, Mark. You know, to your point, I think there's an interesting question of what Cincinnati's doing at the striker position and whether or not we have confidence in any of them, given what you said about Corey Baird, given the reports that we've seen about Popenza, and given Yuya Kubo's being played kind of out of position in that role. None of that is a concern to me, Mark, if Lucho Acosta cooks or if the Rapids do a very good job of limiting Lucho Acosta. And we've seen the Rapids have some really good tests where they've had to deal with that. Christian Espinoza, albeit in a slightly different position in the field, certainly dealing with Lionel Messi and the way that he played, and then also Bouanga cutting inside as well. So I think Moise Bambito and Andreas Maxu are going to be up to it physically with regardless of which one of the strikers that we see up top. And if we see the proper mobility, pressing and gap management from Olivares and Cobasset. I think this is a game where certainly they can contain Lucho, whether or not they contain the ball getting to him or what Lucho is able to do distributing it to other people. But if they can, you know, just like I feel like we say this, Mark, every single time the Rapids have played Minnesota United and they come up against Emmanuel Reynoso, just everything is about what do you do to prevent someone from getting the ball to Reynoso? What do you do to stop Reynoso once he has the ball on his foot? I feel the exact same way about Lucho Acosta, and I would say Lucho Acosta is a better player, even before we account the fact that Reynoso didn't go to his green card appointment and is probably on the outs at Minnesota United and maybe has played his last game in MLS. So I'm looking at that, and certainly I'm curious to see the defensive shape that Cincinnati ends up going with, Mark, but I think either way this is a game to where Colorado's going to be a little bit pragmatic and they're going to be content with not having much of the ball and trying to do stuff in transition, and I think that's something where they can have a little bit of success in that one, Mark. Chris Armis, if you're interested in us giving you a tip if you didn't know already, earlier this season New York Red Bulls went in and got a 2-1 victory against FC Cincinnati on the road, and Mark, we've talked about in the past comparing what the Rapids are doing right now in Red Bulls and also what Red Bulls have become, which is the least Red Bullsy version of the New York Red Bulls. And so maybe there's a similar blueprint that you can go about following in terms of being compact defensively, pressing, but not pressing until the opponent gets into the attacking third as well, and giving them a lot of possession without a purpose, disorganizing them in that way in terms of how you set up, neutralizing their main attacking front, and then doing what you do in transition. Say what you will about Kevin Cabral once he's in the box trying to finish, Mark. He will be a very, very good connector in this game of the Rapids winning the ball, Cabral getting a step on a DeAndre Yedlin, and then him and then somebody threading a pass to him to then open up opportunities for a Calvin Harris, who is goal dangerous, for a Rafael Navajo, who is hopefully occupying some big center backs, to then create space for a late arriving Cole Bassett or a Georgi Mihailovic. Those are all possibilities in which I think this team can create offense. I will bite your arm off right now, Mark, for a 0-0 result. This is a tough road game against a very good team that cost millions of dollars, that won the Supporter Shield last year. You take, this is a good draw to be had, and I will absolutely be content with that. And then we can talk about, you know, moving on to getting a result against NYCFC and then spanking San Jose, you know, in the next home game on May 11th. Anything else that we want to say about this game? Or shall we move on to my conversation with Reed Connolly talking MLS fantasy?
Let's talk about fantasy. I can't wait to listen to this one.
Yes. So listeners, Reed Connolly is the founder of MLS Fantasy Insider and the MLS Fantasy Boss podcast. He'll say it when we get to this conversation that I pre-recorded with him today. But also links will all be in the show notes about what he brings and what he's doing in the MLS fantasy space. If you're interested in knowing more about fantasy, fantasy from a Rapids context, and then looking ahead to this week, as hopefully if you have been playing fantasy, you haven't given up on setting your lineup. I'm still doing it because I'm a sicko. Mark, are you still playing the MLS fantasy, or have you given up for the year?
I am, but I think the cardinal sin, like, if you're really good at fantasy, you do like the keeperoo and you're doing all sorts of like you're like logging in like 30 minutes before the 7:30 games, 30 minutes before the 8:30 games to make sure you set your lineup for the players that got adjusted. Man, I'm not even adjusting my lineup from last week, some weeks. So, you know, for me, like, not forgetting to set my lineup is the key. My rule for fantasy, Matt, I love playing fantasy, is I just want to be on the leaderboard, the top 50 amongst Colorado Rapids fans. That's my goal every season. If I can do that, I'm very happy. Currently, I'm at 98th. Not good enough. Going to have to improve as the season goes on. But, you know, it's a long season. You take it slow. And the other thing is, if you keep setting your lineup at the back end of the season, you'll get better because half the league has given up completely and you can beat them. So those are my fantasy tips for Rapids fans.
Yeah. Rabbi already
they're
mentioned...
not good ones, but they're tips.
Rabbi already mentioned where to find us on the socials earlier in the episode, so I won't take up any more of your time. Listeners, here's my conversation with Reed Connolly, the MLS Fantasy Insider. We'll see you next week.
Peace.
Welcome back, listeners, to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We've got a very special first of the year MLS Fantasy Focus section here today with my good friend from MLS Fantasy Boston, MLS Fantasy Insider, Reed Connolly. Reed, how are you?
Woohoo! I'm doing well. So excited to be here.
Yes. And for those of you who don't know Reed, since we're an audio-only podcast, Reed is based just on the Kentucky side of the border and is an FC Cincinnati fan. And so normally, for HTHL in the beginning, like the first quartile of the season, we try to have him on to talk fantasy specific stuff as we get into the start of the year. We got delayed on that for a number of reasons I won't go into, but so Reed is here now, and Reed is an FC Cincinnati fan, and he will be going to the game on Saturday that the Colorado Rapids are playing, so we figured what a better time to bring him on and everything. So Reed, we'll start general MLS. Tell me about your thoughts on how FC Cincinnati are doing as they look to defend their Supporters Shield title, and what do you see in the game on Saturday?
So general MLS-wise, I have been disappointed with FC Cincinnati's performance. I think we've regressed back to struggling to really get some good possession and creation out of our midfield. We're struggling again with really finishing and having that true producing forward for us up top. And so we've dropped some of the points that I hope to see. We've been on a bit of an uptick lately, though the loss of Celentano has definitely been felt. So not what I would have hoped for starting out the year with how strong they are, but with some of the uptick, I'm hopeful that this will be a chance for us to reset back at home coming off of that win last weekend. So I think if we can get the pieces to click, I think if Acosta is allowed to have the space that he needs to produce, and if at some point
he will not.
That's why I said if he's allowed to have the space he needs to produce, then maybe we can get some things going, or it's just going to have to be like our secret ace in the hole, jack of all trades, Yuya Kuba, who's just going around there, just being a journeyman of playing any position needed to be and scoring us goals apparently when we need to. I'm hopeful that I'm not always betting against Colorado this year, but I do think this will be one of the easier games that we have. That I hope going there with my son and my family that maybe we can win this one. So I'm hoping this will be a reset, but I'm ready for a good game.
I agree with you, Reed. I think the only other two games after knowing the starting 11 in which, from a fantasy standpoint, I was in a position to bet against the Rapids was maybe Seattle, just because you were thinking eventually they were going to figure it out. I think now mm-hmm. with a larger sample size, things are far more concerning at Centrally Link than we would have thought when they played a couple weeks ago. And the only other one would have been the Rapids' first win of the season against RSL, in which, you know, Colorado had only gone once to Sandy, Utah and ever gotten a result. So if you had any more of a secure bet on, you know, MLS rivalry week, it would have been RSL clean sheet and a Cucho goal against Real Salt Lake. And I say this as somebody who did have, I think I had Julian Gressel in as a starter, or I think I had him set up for an auto roof for that game against Miami. But obviously, you know, when Inter was still in Champions League, everything that I was doing from a fantasy standpoint from them was waiting for them to get the actual lineup to see what was going on with Messi, Suarez, etc. But yeah, in any case, moving on to the bigger picture, Reed, it's funny you mentioned that you think that the midfield will have a little bit of trouble holding on to the ball, and I think this might be another game for Oliver Larraz and Cole Bassett to cook. But we're not here to talk about specifically this game. So Reed, let's start with, most of our listeners I think are at least aware of what MLS Fantasy is. I will say that MLSsoccer.com has done a better job in terms of the how tool and what the rules are, in terms of like a noob looking through and understanding the mechanics of the game. So I'll include a link to that in the show notes. If you have any questions, read out to me. Reed, I'll give you a chance to plug the various resources you have. So we won't go necessarily into what is MLS Fantasy, but Reed, what's different for you about 2024 in terms of the rules that you like or the mechanics? What are you noticing that's different from 2023?
Yeah, so the major difference that we have in 2024 is there's been a change in the stat provider, and it's the same stat provider. No, it's not a scrub. It's the same stat provider who provides stats for Bundesliga. So it's quality stats, but it's not Opta stats, which is what we've been used to. And so that has transitioned into the fantasy game as well. And so we've seen a difference in the actions that generate points. So the scoring actions are different. Second assists are gone. That's if you've listened to any of my content, you know that has been a stat that I have grumbled about for several years. But second assists are gone. They added in an aerial stat that came and went because it wasn't being calculated correctly. But most significantly is the defensive numbers changed this year. The bonus points that defenders have been able to generate historically from clearances, from crosses, from interceptions, from blocks, all that big stuff, it are gone. And so it's really neutered the defensive point production that we've seen from players historically and sent us back to an era of almost just straight up clean sheet hunting. And for me, that's shifted more towards these center backs. They're not always the big bonus point producing center backs that I have preferred traditionally, but I've looked for guys who have been more targets of set plays or potentially able to get some bonus points from their passing numbers because some of those wing backs have just been more volatile than usual. And so that's been a really big difference for a lot of people to get into. And even on the circles that I'm in with fantasy, we're still trying to get a handle on how important bonus point generation is in general this year, since it's really been more focused on assists and goals and clean sheets.
I agree with you, Reed, and we'll get to this in a little bit where we talk about the state of my fantasy team and maybe needing a little bit of help from you. But I don't watch a whole lot of Bundesliga, so I feel like for the leagues that I watch and then understanding their stats provider and then being able to translate that then to the Premier League fantasy setup or the MLS fantasy setup, I feel like I have a very good understanding of. And I don't have that because I don't watch a whole lot of Bundesliga. Ironically, you know, I started paying attention maybe a month ago to their season, and I was exclusively watching Bayern Leverkusen games because, oh my God, Bayern Munich might not actually win the Bundesliga. So to your point where this isn't a complaint, I'm not, you know, about to DM Ben Baer or Andrew Wiebe on this or anything, but the fact that I've done a poor job so far in my fantasy team in terms of understanding how those stats are different in terms of what I'm predicting, and maybe that's been contributed to my lack of success from a fantasy standpoint. And to your point, Reed, where I'm particularly frustrated with I think they finally debugged the pricing setup and everything. We've seen, you know, almost like the crazy inflation of players, you know, where it was 10 weeks into the season. And like, I think I finished last year, Reed, on like 137 million in terms of my budget. And at that point, like, I've got so much money. You get to the point where, you know, everybody asymptotes to the most amount of money to where just picking the most expensive players doesn't make sense because of the context of the week. So then the actual budgeting component of it doesn't work. It doesn't help me, particularly with how early we are in the season, that I am very much I go for growing my budget quicker than necessarily going immediately for points as well. So I was team Jared Stroud through like week 9 of last week, for example, who was like 5.5-6 million at one point for St. Louis City. So that's been a disadvantage to me. But to your point, where I'm really frustrated is, as you were saying the comment about clean sheet hunting, I immediately thought of like 2017. Yeah. I think the fact that there are more teams in the league, though, there's, you know, like we're picking such a smaller percentage than we were a decade ago of the players who are available to you in MLS that, you know, there's two or three fullbacks that are played out of position where they're more attacking players, or there's coaches that are doing weird stuff where you've got one fullback that is taking set pieces. And so, you know, I, on the whole of the season, not necessarily so far this year, but like Brooks Lennon, And then Kai Wagner from Philadelphia, like our 1 and 2 in that lineup. And then when Miami's done some rotation, you've also seen that the aforementioned Julian Gressel has moved up as well. But, you know, that goes back to, Reed, we could go down a rabbit hole of the Rodney Wallace cheat code of Portland Timbers when he was listed as a defender, but he was played as a winger and on that Portland team that was playing in a 4-3-3 and made it to MLS Cup. But so, you know, to your point, I'm frustrated with where things are in terms of the defensive scoring because of the way that structure is. And it limits the fun of it when there's just two guys that I automatically write in. I know with the way that midfielder points are going, I'm automatically going to use an auto-roo or a switcheroo on a defender anyways, where I'm using the same two or three guys, and then I'm just cherry-picking a clean sheet to pick in that. But, you know, with that regard, Reed, how personally is your fantasy team doing? What's been your strategy that's worked for you this year?
Sure. I'll use this opportunity to use my first cantrip to plug some of my content. And I know you threw out the switcheroo, otteroo content. So if anyone's listening right now and doesn't understand what that is, I've got a video over on the MLS Fantasy Boss YouTube channel. You can find it through the MLSFantasyBoss.com website as well. But I've got a video for this season for round one that explains how to do the switcheroo and otteroo. And I'm happy to do some examples for this round as well. because that's a great strategy that really pays off for a lot of players throughout the many years that it's been available to us. For me personally, for this year, I did focus on value building at the beginning of the season, but only the first three or four rounds is what I did, because that's when the more games that come in, we start seeing that variance of games falling off, new games adding on. And so I was trying to do some value hunting when price rises were more assured. And I had mixed results with that. My co-host Ashley on MLSFI did just banger with doing her values, and she wasn't even really trying. So I'm currently sitting at 137.1 million with my team value, 0.4. I guess I had some in the bank with this latest team. Overall, I'm at rank 201, so a little bit lower than I usually shoot for. I usually try to at least be in the top 100, but I had a little rough start with some of the value moves I was going for this week. The past round, it was great. I had 118. I was weak rank 127, so rose up very high in the ranks. So it was really great. And I utilized some of those defensive strategies that we were just talking about here. I've gone more for that clean sheet hunting. And oftentimes that means you can just find the cheapest way into a defense that you think is going to maybe get clean sheets and help save some of that value for you. So I started out with three Seattle players on the field, Roldan, Nuhu, and Fry. And then I had Freese and Martins on my bench. And when I saw that New York got those clean sheets, I was like, fantastic. I immediately scrubbed out who I needed, saving myself some red card woes. And then I also had Cucho. And so I immediately scrubbed out my other player. And so I was able to just utilize that. Unfortunately, my Houston defense didn't pay off for a clean sheet, so I didn't get a full five clean sweep. But that's kind of what I've been trying to do and what I did this last week of trying to do those clean sheet huntings. Otherwise, Captain Messi, almost an automatic every week. And I had a good production for my LAFC guys last week. My LA Galaxy guys last week. So it's been going pretty well overall.
Yeah. Reed, every single time I do a guest on another show, I try to always plug it. So I have to believe there's at least a half dozen members of your Discord who came through because they heard me mention on Holding the High Line that I went on, the MLS Fantasy podcast with you on Monday night. And Ashley, hi, Ashley, if you're listening. Reed, from the last 2 years when you've had me on and we talk about the Rapids, it's mostly them playing bad or getting value and having Connor Ronan on your bench, maybe. And then other than that, it's which players am I picking that are playing against the Rapids? What have you seen in the Rapids so far this year from a fantasy standpoint? What has made them a more intriguing option just because they're not bad and predictable and easy for you to just pick against them?
Yeah. So this year, I'm happy to say that, and as you and I would talk about before the show, the Rapids are less fantasy relevant, but in a good way. So I am not always automatically targeting the Rapids for, okay, who is going to score against the Rapids this week? That's something I reserve more for like Chicago or San Jose right now. But for the Rapids, they actually have some options that I look at from time to time. Last week, they were very frequently discussed in chat in our MLS Fantasy Boss Discord and on the show. Going up against Dallas, a lot of people were looking at the potential for Colorado. We were talking about Bassett. We were talking about Mihailovic. We were talking about some of the other defensive options that might be there. For me, when Colorado has been an option, it's always been a bench option. So it's been someone that I could use within a roux, something that maybe I can preview for just possible, just easy points or a budget option. They've not always been a go-to for me to put into my field. And that's just been too for consistency. And the two go-tos I usually look at are Cole Bassett and Jordy Mihailovic. Bassett has been by far the more consistent one right there. I know Navarro has come through hit or miss, but there's honestly usually better forwards that I'm targeting or more consistent forwards before I'm going there. So Bassett and Mihailovic have been two that I have looked at as potential bench options. Did not go with that last week, but that was mostly because I saw Bassett was on the injury list, and so that mm-hmm. really had some reservations for me. But happy to say, not targeting Colorado and sometimes considering them as a bench play.
Yeah, absolutely, Reed. I, funnily enough, I had Bassett. I had a little bit of extra budget, and I decided to throw caution to the wind when I was when Colorado played Miami. So I had Bassett on my bench for that one, set up for an auto roux, and worked out nicely. Albeit it took 2 minutes before the end of regular time for him to cash in on that I agree with you, Reed, that if you're looking at anybody from a fantasy standpoint right now, from a Rapids perspective, it is certainly Cole Bassett. We don't need to go fully down this rabbit hole. Rabbi and I are going to do this separately as well. But the defense has been better of late. If they could just start getting clean sheets or just not giving up an obvious goal, there's a bunch of really cheap players in there that immediately could be, you know, a player stonk, a game stop, or like an NVIDIA style situation. Yeah. Since I feel like there's a lot of MLS fantasy users who make stock market jokes in this as well, and I am one of them. But so, you know, I've had Moise Bombito in my lineup as I've been teeting around a few times, and he's sitting at 6.3, and I think he's set to take off as well. And let me scroll down. Zach Steffens at 5.9, which is dirt cheap for a keeper. Granted, you know, he's only averaging 2.5 points per game. And I feel like at this point, Reed, you either go for, as you mentioned, you either go for a keeper who's going to set you up for a clean sheet, or you go for a guy who you know is going to face a lot of shots and then therefore get a lot of save volume. So that's like the Joe Willis in Nashville kind of scenario, where like his floor is probably like 4 points. Just, you know, he's going to play 90 minutes. They're going to give up no more than one or two goals, and he's going to make a bunch of saves. But I feel like with how they've improved the pricing setup and everything, I feel like the goalkeepers have been much more reasonably priced. So I've been setting up, like you mentioned, an auto Rue. I also did the freeze Stefan Fry last week. So I've been setting that up. And while I think from a scheduling standpoint, the fact that there's fewer Friday night games and then fewer Sunday games to where I can set up across the schedule, the simultaneous schedule, especially from the Mountain Time Zone, doesn't work from a fantasy lineup continuity standpoint, which is frustrating. But, you know, the fact that we've had that variability has allowed me, if I like one of the 5:30 Mountain Time goalkeepers, then I can set them up and then quickly pivot for the Mountain Time Zone, or certainly one of the West Coast time zones. But Reed, I think we can, holding the high line officially takes the stance of like, we'd like more Sunday games so that we can actually watch some other games. And the fact that that would also then help my fantasy team would be beneficial in that regard. Reed, anything else on that? Or do we want to pivot to you helping me with this week? Because I am failing based on my own impersonal standards in MLS fantasy.
Let's pivot to helping for this week, because yeah, I mean, I think we'll end on a high note for what I'm looking at Colorado.
Okay, so Reed, first of all, I will say let's start with some positives here. I am currently second out of 20 in the holding the high line head-to-head league as well, as I mentioned to you before the show. But as one of the people in the MLS Fantasy Insider Ether, I get invited to some of the specialty groups that we have. And so there's the host invitational, which you have, of which I am 26 out of 30. Let me check the standings to see where I'm at on that. I have, so I've got 3 wins and 6 losses, and I've got 9 points and some distance between me and other people as well. I'm doing better than Black and Red, and I never know who Black and Red is. I don't know who half of these people are, Reed, to be honest with you. I know that they're people in the league. I don't know that they are their fantasy teams. But so the real problem I have, Reed, is in the, you have several set up MLS Fantasy Boss Pro Rel leagues. I'm in the top of those leagues, the Champions League. I think in the entire history of me being in these, I've been in the Champions League. I made the final a couple years ago and lost to one of the guys who actually does the MLS fantasy articles for MLSsoccer.com, which was a really proud moment for me personally. But Reed, I'm sitting 30 out of 30 on this one. I've lost. I have 1 win. Oh, I didn't realize I must have won last week with one of the auto ruse that I have. I've only had 700 points across the 9 weeks that we've played. That's last in the league. I'm about mid-table in terms of points against, if that makes sense. So, Reed, help me out. Give me a differential, a diamond in the rough. Give me an option that is specific to Cincinnati versus Colorado, and give me a non-messy no-brainer. You have to start him. It'll be okay.
Okay. Well, I'll start out by letting everyone know that when we're talking about these leagues that I'm administering, I pretty much have all my leagues set up as head-to-heads. So just because Matt may be in the bottom does not mean he is still not getting solid scores. It just may mean that he's losing by 1 or 2 points, which often happens to me as well, because in the Champions League and in the Hosts Invitational League for MLSFI, these are some of the top players in the game. We've got the number one overall player right now in Christian Ward in these leagues. We've had past champions in these leagues. And so these are definitely tough, tough leagues. So coming in 30th in the Hosts Invitational, not anything.
We're all top 200-300. And it just so happens that, you know, I'm playing against all of those others. There's a reason it's the Champions League one, Reed. But
yeah. It's rough. So let's start with just maybe just some general tips and things for this round. I know this is going to be a rough one for any of those Arus, but there are two games that can easily accommodate this for everyone. And so this could be the opportunity for someone to get some sneaky points right here. If you're looking at the teams, of course, Austin versus LA Galaxy is going to play that first game. You will have plenty. What's that going to be? 3:45 for you guys? Or is that 2:45 now?
I have it as 11:45 a.m.
I'm going the wrong way. All right. Anyway, Austin versus LA Galaxy. We'll just go with that. So Austin versus LA Galaxy. I'm an East Coast guy. I'm sorry. This is easily going to be over before any of the games start. Austin has had some struggles at scoring, but they are the home team, which for MLS is a very real impact for benefiting our stats. But if you wanted to take a flyer on a road guy, you could have McCarthy in your goal and just see what happens. He's 6.3, not super expensive in the grand scheme of things with budgets. And if he gets a clean sheet, that is easy points right there. You can automatically go. On the other end of the spectrum is LAFC versus Portland, who has that late the last game. And that one is trickier because I do not like that matchup very well. I have seen Lloris been a very common player to be for a keeperoo, but I am very worried about Portland with Mora and with Evander especially being very on point right now, especially Evander. I just fear that is not a great shot for clean sheets right there. But if you wanted to hedge your bets, you definitely have options with keepers with Lloris or McCarthy for your Aru. For the other keeper, though, I really like the conversations I've heard so far right now about Galese. Toronto is playing midweek in the Canadian Championship, have been struggling some to score. I know a lot of people are looking at Freese this week, but I think when we talked about him on MLSFI, I think looking at Galese with Toronto as his opponent could be an interesting keeper option that could pair well with either of these keeper roos.
Okay, and then so Reed, give me a fantasy perspective. Give me one player from FC Cincinnati versus Colorado. If you pick an FCC player, I won't get mad at you. And then give me an obvious, like a non-Messi guy I absolutely have to have in my lineup.
Okay, so I am going to go with an FCC player versus Colorado. I mean, if you're going to be you've got to get rid of the homer part. And so this is not a homer pick. This is me seeing what we can take advantage of. I'm going to look at the defense right now, which you can do this. I think there are. There is a good argument to be made that Yedlin is a good, strong choice in this matchup. Mm-hmm. When he is able, if your guys give him the ability to start sending in crosses, that's going to be the caveat I put. And so if you don't think that, then don't listen to this. If he is able to get those crosses, when he puts them in, he just becomes a machine at making those key passes. And when those start to connect, his bonus points fly up. And that gives him a much better chance at actually getting a true assist. And so if he is given that space and able to move, then I think Yedlin has a really good shot. And with people like Lucho and Kubo and Bupinza coming in there, there's a good chance that people have to respect them and maybe give Yedlin that room that he needs to start putting in those crosses. So I think Yedlin's a great shout for the Cincinnati-Colorado game this week.
Okay, excellent stuff, Reed. Reed, would you say that have you varied in terms of your auto roo approach, or you know, me getting off to such a really bad start in MLS fantasy is making me rethink anything. For years now, I have been set up an auto roo with an Eastern Conference goalkeeper, and then I've pretty much been set up an auto roo or switch roo with a defender, 5 starting midfielders that are my guys as well, and then tinkering as well. Like, from what's your formation strategy, or has that evolved with some of the changes you've seen this year?
So I have had some evolution in my strategy because of this season. And a lot of that is I am now trying to play 3 forwards every week. Previously, a forward spot would very often be where I would put my scrub player to activate one of my Arus. But this year, we have had all but 1 or 2 rounds so far this season where a forward has not been the best captain option of the year. And historically, that has been our midfielders who are just generating those big bonus points, but there have been hits to those bonus point generations. So these forwards who can come in and score have just been bread and butter when it comes to that. And so I've been trying to maximize my ability to get forwards, which often means I'm looking at 1 or 2 defender scrubs, or sometimes even a midfield scrub, which historically has not been where I've chosen to put those scrubs at. And so leading into the player that's not Messi that I think you really need to have this week, It's Christian Benteke. And if that wasn't already on your list, he needs to be. He is a quality player that is able to score. Seattle had those two red cards to starting defenders last week. They're going to be hurting. Now, they are potentially going to have Nathan at their disposal because they've traded away options there. So Nathan could be in, who has definitely been a favorite of the Fantasy Boss community, but he's no slouch. But I think Christian Benteke is a no-brainer, must be on your team this week other than Messi at the forward spot.
Okay, I will admit, Reed, that I think I've had Benteke three times in my starting 11 this season, and it's the three games that he has not scored in. So I'm going to trust you on this one. But if he doesn't end up scoring at Seattle, Reed, I might have my new Lucho Acosta, Michael Barrios as well. That's an inside joke for those of you who don't listen to MLS Fantasy Insider. Reed, for the longest period of time, when he picked Michael Barrios, both when he was with Dallas and then with Colorado, he would always have a crappy game. And then similarly, I would always select the one game. I would always start and captain Lucho Acosta when he had his one terrible year. Now, I did captain Lucho Acosta against my better judgment in beating Rabbi in head-to-head in the HTHL league last year. So I have absolved him. Lucho Acosta and I have a clean slate. Michael Barrios isn't in MLS anymore, so Reed can't rag on him and the Rapids attack being inconsistent as well. But Christian Benteke better score, otherwise we might have a new content thing for us to joke about, Reed. Reed, this has been fantastic. Thank you again for taking the time to come on the show. Where can people find you, find your work, learn more about MLS Fantasy, become a part of the MLS Fantasy community?
Yeah, absolutely. You can the easiest way is head over to MLSFantasyBoss.com. That's my website. That's where we post links to our podcast, the MLS Fantasy Insider. We post articles there about differentials. We post a community poll from the MLS Fantasy Boss Discord channel, and it's just where you can see all the content hub. If you want to become a part of the Discord community, again, MLSFantasyBoss.com/Discord lets you join. It's free. It's fun. Top players, like I said, are in the servers. They are happy to help. It's a fun, friendly community. We very much pride ourselves in the ability for our community to just welcome newcomers. And so if you are new to this game, I encourage you to come out, ask your questions. If you're an old hat, come in and just bounce some ideas back and forth and see what the general talk is. So anything there, you can find me. And of course, I'm also on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. All of those links will be in the show notes. Reed, thank you again for joining us. Listeners, have a very, very good weekend from a fantasy and from a Rapids perspective. We'll see you next week. Hi, Chris. Hi.